This is the Beltline to Broadway podcast. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, and on this episode, I'm chatting with Tao Nguyen. Hello, everyone. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, and on this episode, I am chatting with actor, singer, teaching artist, Tao Nguyen, who recently appeared off-Broadway in the English world premiere of Tropical Angels with Musical Theater Factory and the Taipei Cultural Center in Taiwan. I reached out to Tao to ask him for this interview following the Atlanta shooting wherein 8 people were killed, 6 of whom were Asian women. Tao told me that this event hit very close to home, and that is where our conversation begins.
You know, it hits really close to home because my mother is a salon worker. She owns a nail salon. So that's very much the industry that she's in. And it's very much, it could have been her, you know. She doesn't own a massage salon, but she owns a nail salon. And when I was describing this to one of my friends who asked how I was doing, I got a bit emotional, and I didn't think I would have gotten that emotional, but I did, thinking about how it could have been my mom.
After the year we've had and so many attacks on Asian Americans, do you become numb to it?
I don't think so. I think the fire inside of me is still dancing, and I still want to use my voice to make people more aware of it. It's unlike the Black Lives Matter movement, demographically, there are only 5% of us in the United States. You know, Asian Americans make up 5%. So it's very, it's very hard to grasp how impactful this one small event is to our community, because we only make up 5% of the population. So just trying to educate people and saying, hey, this is actually really big, and it should be something that people should be aware of, you know?
Since George Floyd was murdered, we've also seen a rising up in our performing arts industries, and specifically the We See You White American Theater movement. Are Asian artists being left out of these very important conversations?
I think people are trying to involve us as much as possible. Like I said, there's so few of us, especially in the entertainment industry. You know, I think statistically on Broadway back in 2018 or 17, I was looking, we made up like 5% of the performers on stage, you know? So it's very hard. But we're out there to find Asian actors to talk about this. There are many theaters in New York, like the Mayi Theater and the Asian American Performer Coalition up there, who are rallying and who are willing to talk about our experience. Are we being left out of the conversation? I don't think so, but I feel like we could be invited more. We could be... yeah, like what you're doing right now, you know, we could have our voices elevated on certain platforms a little bit more.
And I think when we talk about marginalized communities, it's not a monolith, right? I mean, right. We can't cast these big umbrellas and lose sight of the individual.
Yes, and I think it's very important to note that there are people within, I can speak for the Vietnamese community because I'm Vietnamese. There are people in the Vietnamese community who was totally 100% for Trump and totally 100% towards for the insurrection that happened at the U.S. Capitol. There are people like that in my community, and it's interesting to know how, or to think that as a minority, you would support someone who shows outward hatred towards minority. You know, back during the early years of Trump's presidency, He tried deporting Vietnamese Americans who are here as a permanent resident or on visas. I have a green card. I'm not a U.S. citizen. I am a permanent resident. So that would have applied to me. So that started my anger and I wouldn't say resentment, but that was a huge part of my fight to not have him in the office anymore, because he tried to deport my family, or he had legislation that could deport my family and myself.
I want to talk about coded language. There was nothing coded about our former president's language. He was very direct in what he said, but there is a lot of coded language in the entertainment industry. I feel like particularly, you know, when it comes to humor, you know, quite often I feel like Asians are the butt of the joke. So can we talk a little bit about coded language and how we can shift the narrative a little bit?
Right. So that type, coded language is just, you know, a fancy way of saying racism and stereotype, right? So that extends way back to, for Asian Americans, extends way back to when the Chinese folk were helping make the railway for the United States. You know, we see old caricatures of the single ponytail and the exaggerated eyes and this and this and this. So that stems, it's hundreds of years back, and it's systemic and leading all the way up to where we are currently. There's a slight change in the entertainment industry where, you know, we see Asian leads now, we see Asian love romantics. When 10 years ago, you know, if you were Asian, you had to be the funny guy like Ken Jeong. Or you had to be the butt of the joke, or you had to be the stereotypical doctor or lawyer. But now I think we are moving into an era where we see someone like Simu Liu, who is Shang-Chi in the new Marvel movie. So I think we are entering a phase of recognizing that Asian people don't have to be the sidekick. Asian people aren't the butt of the jokes. We are our own, you know, presence and force to be reckoned with. Just like people of other minorities, like the Black community and the Muslim community and the Latino industry, you know, we are being recognized as people, not as stereotypes.
Even the director of the new In the Heights movie, which I'm so excited about.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Being a working artist, though, are you still seeing any coded language in casting notices?
Yes, I do, but it's changing. For the longest time, I regretted that I was only, or resented that I was only submitted for Asian roles. You know, for the longest time, I'm like, I could play a lead. I don't have to be the Asian sidekick, because that's what it was a lot of the time. I mean, I can fall in love too. I can, you know, you can, I think a lot of the times, especially as Westerners, what we see, we relate to. So because we're only 5% of the population over here, when we see an Asian people fall in love in a movie, you know, as the average white audience, they're like, oh, that's cool. Asian people fall in love. How can I relate to that? As opposed to being like, they're just people falling in love. But there's that barrier. You want to see people like you on screen. And that's where the trouble lies. I want to see, you know, happy stories about my people. And I want to see my people fall in love. And I want to see my people be prosperous in the film industry, or in as characters in films and TV and on this theater stage. So it's just a matter of providing more opportunities for Asian American performers and creating new content for them that aren't stereotypically quote unquote Asian.
I think what you're speaking to and what's so interesting about this is I just spoke to one of our writers on Beltline to Broadway, and she identifies as a Black woman. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about the fact that it's time to elevate the Black story beyond the slave narrative.
Yes.
Let's tell a different story. Or, you know, on a recent interview, somebody said, it's time to elevate the gay narrative beyond the coming out story. Yes. We're past that. what happens next? And that's what I hear you saying.
Yeah, I would echo all of that. I mean, I've seen tens, like I've seen so many of stories about the Vietnam War, especially through the American lens, right? And our people's story is so much more than the Vietnam War. You know, the Vietnam War lasted just for a certain period, but what happens after that? Or can we tell a different story? It doesn't have to be a story of struggle all the time. When I say I'm a Vietnamese actor, it doesn't mean when I say I want to portray more Vietnamese stories, I don't want to just portray, you know, a story about the war. I recently saw a new Vietnamese movie called Mẹ ơi con xin về, which translates to Mom, I'm leaving. And it's about a queer man who takes his boyfriend back to Vietnam to meet his mom. Now, this is very revolutionary because Vietnam, up until like 10 years ago, was not cool with the queer community. They were not cool with the LGBTQIA+ community. So this breaks two grounds. The queerness of it and also the fact that it's not about the war, right? So people are creating new narratives, and I'm excited to see where these stories go.
So do you think we're going to start seeing a cultural shift in the stories we're going to see on our main stages and who gets to tell those stories?
I hope so. One can dream, right? I really, really hope so. And from what I'm seeing and from the passion coming out from the theater community, I think it's a possibility. You know, we talked about last time Crazy Rich Asians. It showed a different side of the Asian community that very few people knew existed, right? So I'm hoping we're on that journey of exploring new and innovative stories about Asian Americans. And casting can open their eyes to different types of people and not box everyone into a certain category. In opera, there's a certain thing called a Fach, F-A-C-H, and it's a German term, and it's how you categorize your voice. And it's literally for the opera company to put you into a certain box of like, oh, you're a bigger voice, you will only sing these roles. You are a lighter voice, you will only sing these roles. So that's called the Fach system, and it's only handy to the institution, not to the artist. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that relates to where we are today in the Western or in the acting world, where casting directors put you in a box, and that's good for them because they can just roll the Rolodex, find you in a file and say, funny, Asian, male, got it, he's here. As opposed to me as an actor being like, I am more than what you just listed. I am more than that, Fach.
So when we hear the terms on the casting director side, colorblind casting or color conscious casting, should those terms become irrelevant under this new rising up, under this new normal, this new movement that we're beginning to see?
I think there needs to be a seesawing effect where it needs to be more prevalent. Color conscious casting needs to be more on the tongue of casting directors, so much so that it might reach a point where one side of the seesaw is a little bit higher than the other side. I would kind of sort of like to see an abundance of color conscious casting of people of color, kind of sort of overriding the previous historical type of casting, and then even out. I think that's what our industry kind of sort of needs.
And it's so interesting to me how when we begin to look at things through a different lens, how how our perspective changes. For example, I don't know if you saw this production, but what came through last year was the touring production of Miss Saigon. I guess it was last year, 2 years ago.
I remember.
I hated this production. And my biggest issue with it was this exploitation of Asian women, Asian characters. And when I had this kind of visceral reaction to the show, people were very critical of me, saying I just didn't get it.
Yes. I mean, speaking about perspective, back in the day when I was younger, a young new performer, I was like, Miss Saigon, I would like, bee's knees. Yes, I would have paid anything to be in Miss Saigon, because to me, I was like, oh, that's a job for me. I'm literally Vietnamese. I understand the story. The music I thought was beautiful. And I still think Schoenberg's music is beautiful, but as a more educated person in general, and as a more, you know, as a different person, my thoughts on Miss Saigon has changed immensely. I'm very glad those brown Asian actors on stage are getting work. I am thrilled about that. The story, not so much. It's loosely based off of Madame Butterfly, right? And in Vietnamese culture, Asian women are very strong, portrayed as very strong. So obviously you could tell it's a Western's perspective. They would never, yes, they would give their children up for a better life, but at the end she would never kill herself, because in Vietnamese culture, that's very, not frowned upon, but a Vietnamese woman would never do that. She would survive, make her way to America, and find her child. That would be the true story, instead of killing herself after giving up her child.
Is representation on stage in the opera world or in the world of dance? Because you do a lot of work in the opera. Mm-hmm. Is it better than in mainstream plays or musicals?
Opera world is a different beast. If you basically over there or in the opera world, if you have the voice, then you will be cast. It's really, once again, back to the Fox system. In order to sing Madame Butterfly, you have to have what's called a spinto voice, which is a very strong, piercing, bigger voice to sing over Puccini's orchestration. You don't have to be Asian to play Madame Butterfly. Madame Butterfly was created by a white man, right? So so if you have the voice, you can sing it. For the longest time, we saw Aidas being performed by white women who were being tanned and made darker. That was the custom back in the day. But now if anyone does that, you know, it's totally frowned upon. And these days we have Asian performers who can do Madame Butterfly. We have black performers who can do Aida. So there's really no excuse to cast anyone else in the story.
Are audiences more open to seeing an Asian actor on stage in an opera, mm-hmm, playing either an Asian or non-Asian role, then they would be seeing an Asian actor on Broadway playing, let's say, Ariel, the Little Mermaid.
Opera audiences love the suspension of disbelief. if it sounds pretty, they're in it. So I don't know if it matters that much to the general operatic audience. And once again, that's changing because a certain generation is leaving and a new generation is coming in, right? For Broadway, I think it's kind of sort of new and exciting whenever you get a Black Evan Hansen or an Asian Evan Hansen, which we've had, and they made headlines, you know? So I think it's exciting when we see a role that was created with a white actor in mind being played by someone else. I think it's very exciting. And I think Broadway is, I would say, very accepting, more accepting. I think there's a celebration of like, oh, remember when we had the first Black Jenna and it was in Waitress, and it was just, everyone was very excited about it, and that was something to be excited about. It's sad that we are excited about that, but it's good that we recognize that this is a good thing, that this character is not so one dimension that only a certain type of person could play it.
Well, and I looked to The Little Mermaid. I remember when I saw Little Mermaid on tour, The principal role, Ariel, was being played by an Asian actress. She was beautiful. She was fantastic. But it shouldn't have made news that she was Asian.
Right.
She was just good. Why do we have to qualify it?
I know. It's like I said, it's sad that we're so excited. The fact that she was an Asian Ariel. But I think because we celebrate that, that tells the casting directors, oh, this is a good thing that just happened. By us casting that understudy who was Asian, we did a good thing. Let's do more of it in the future. I think the more we're happy about it, the more the industry says that, says, okay, let's do more of this.
In my mind, it's like, okay, that shouldn't matter. It should just matter about the talent. But
right. And one day that will be the case. And one day that will be our, you know, utopic ideal situation where it's like, oh, another Asian performer, or like, oh, cool, what can you bring to the story as opposed to just your skin tone?
So after George Floyd was murdered, we saw every theater, certainly every main stage theater, put out their solidarity statements.
Right.
After the Atlanta murders, again, it's kind of funny. In my mind, I was like, oh, great. Again, with the solidarity statements. Yeah. What is your take on these solidarity statements, and how can theaters really demonstrate to artists and to audiences that these aren't just words?
That's very important. A solidarity, giving a good press release is important. As a theater, you need to state what side you are on. So I think that's important, but it also needs to be backed up by action, right? Words sometimes, most of the time, means nothing unless it's backed up by action. So those theaters need to release those statements and then create programs and create opportunities that back up what they say.
So does that mean bringing Asian artists to the table? Does that mean programming Asian stories? Does it mean casting Asian artists in non-Asian roles? Or is it all of it?
Yeah, it's all, I believe it's all of it. I think it just means they have to work harder, you know? It's a literal, like, you have to go out and find them and make the extra effort to find your Asian artists to bring in. You can't just say, oh, we opened it, I hope they come in. I think theater companies have to take it upon themselves if they want to be that representation and be that beacon of light to go above and beyond. To find, if they're casting for an Asian role, don't just open it, but actively go and present it to an Asian community or to an area where there are a lot of Asian performers. I think release the statement, make the programs, and then actively look for opportunities or look for your what you need. Sometimes a lot of theater companies, you know, want to cast Asian shows, but they don't. They say, oh, no Asian people showed up, or not that many showed up. And in my brain, I'm like, did you go out looking? Did you try hard enough to find us? Because we're out there. It's very important to know that if you don't adapt to the times and if you don't change your theater, it will not survive. Not only will actors choose not to work for you, but your audience might not choose to go see you. So yes, it's a moral thing to support, but it's also a good business idea to, you know, be more inclusive. I would
definitely best business practice. I actually just saw a survey out of DC that said audiences are more likely to subscribe to theaters who have demonstrated that they have actively done this kind of work than theaters who haven't. I know you've worked on the academic side of performance as a teaching artist. When we talk about building anti-racist theater systems, does an anti-racist system begin at the educational level?
Always. It always starts with education, in my belief. You have to start, if you can get them young, that's a good thing. If you can teach them about, you know, the troubles of the world, they can grow up and change the world. And I can sit back and relax a little bit. In my program and in my interaction with younger artists, I'm talking like I'm in my like late and in my heyday of my performing. But when I'm working with high schoolers and middle schoolers, I try to be very conscious in how I speak to them and how I cast them and in how I encourage them to embrace their roles. So yes, it starts very young and it starts with education.
So Jeremy L. Harris, playwright of Slave Play, posted on Twitter after the Atlanta attacks, "I'm seeing people give the advice to send a text of support or check in on your Asian Pacific Islander friends in response to hashtag Stop Asian Hate." He goes on to say that as a Black person, he hated getting messages from random people saying, "Times are bad, are you good?" And that maybe all the do-gooders should rethink that. What's your thought? I mean, I'm sure after these Atlanta attacks, you were getting texts and messages from well-meaning friends, maybe well-meaning random people. Checking in on you, asking if you were okay. Is it not appropriate to do that? And if so, what can we do to support our Asian friends?
Bookmark, just a side note, I had the privilege of seeing Slave Play on Broadway. And first off, it's phenomenal. And I was there the night where the playwright and one of the actresses were sitting on stage doing a Q&A. That was also the infamous night where one of the audience members stood up and said, "I can't relate to this story. I'm not a racist." And the playwright geniusly said, "Then the story doesn't pertain to you if you don't, like, okay, cool. Why are you making a big scene out of it?" A note about Slave Play: if you get the chance, watch it. It's a work of art and genius, and it's fantastic. Responding to the question whether you should reach out to your person of color after a major event has happened to make sure if they're okay, I can answer for myself. It's really weird when I haven't talked to somebody in a year and they reach out of the blue and say, "Hey, I saw this. Are you okay?" There's a weird aspect about it. I am, but then I smile after that. I have a moment of like, wait, are you just reaching out because you see that my people are in trouble? But then I think, oh, that's very nice. It's daunting to have to answer all the texts and say, "I'm okay, thank you for reaching out." I'm a very introverted person. So when I don't want to have to carry a conversation out longer than needed. So it's very daunting to have to answer the same question over and then continue the conversation being like, "How are you? How are you doing? I heard that you just had a baby," you know? For me, there's a moment of weirdness, but then I smile. But for people, if you're close to me and if we talk like every day, then I kind of sort of am happy that you are checking in on me because we do have that type of relationship. I can't talk for other people, but for me, that's how I feel about it.
There's a difference between asking someone, "Are you okay?" which is just yes or no. "Okay, I'm done. Check that box. I checked on you. Yay me." Versus, "What do you need from me? What do you need from us?" And so I think we need to rephrase the questions if the hearts are in the right place.
Yeah, that's the same thing with the theater company. You know, you release a mission statement, but then you don't follow through with it. It's the same thing of like, it's the question of what can I do to help, as opposed to I did my good deed for the day. I talked to my only Asian friend and made sure they're okay. And a lot of times when they do ask me, what else can I do? I can say, make your news feed make sure you educate people on your news feed. Make sure you share accurate stories about, Asian lives for suffering, and just educating your news feed is one of the biggest things I tell people how they can help. Just educating people.
Do you think things will get better for Asian Americans under the Biden administration?
I think President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris, their speech the other day down in Atlanta shows that they are very aware of the situation and they want to do something about it. They currently are talking about gun control and asking the House and the representatives to review gun control and stuff like that. So I think, I think they want to do better, whether the American people want to do better, whether our Congress and everyone in power want to do better, I don't know. But from their actions, President and Vice President, they want better. They want things to get better, obviously.
So my last question for you is, when George Floyd was murdered and we saw this uprising, the Black Lives Matter movement, there was a lot of discussion about the fact that Black and brown people didn't want to carry the emotional labor of educating their white friends, that white people really had to take the onus and educate themselves.
Right.
When we spoke last, you provided such amazing resources. So what artists, what plays, what work should we be filling our feeds with and filling our reading lists with to educate ourselves?
The movie I recently watched was Raya and the Last Dragon. And as an Asian person, Southeastern Asian person, I can relate to that story a lot. And I thought it was very well done. And the Raya was voiced by the first Vietnamese Disney princess. So I couldn't be more happier. And the whole cast was created or made up of Asian people. So I totally recommend Raya. What else do I recommend? I just read everything. I recommend Amy Tan. I recommend his name is Viet Thanh Nguyen, and he is a Pulitzer Prize winner. And I think just more and more education. I don't mind educating other people because I am an educator, but I can see how it can be so daunting for other people to have your white friends come up to you and say, tell me about this, or like, what is your experience with this, or how should I act? I could see how that's very, very, very daunting. I don't mind myself as an educator to educate.
Which is what you're doing now, which is why I'm so appreciative. About a week after recording this interview, an incident in the theater community happened wherein Julie Lee, an actress nominated for an Ovation Award for her performance in the East-West Players production of Hannah and the Dread Gazebo, became the center of a firestorm. The presenter of the award not only mispronounced Lee's name, but during the broadcast, a castmate's image was shown on the screen in place of Lee's when the category was announced. East-West Players quickly issued a statement and revoked their membership in the LA Stage Alliance, the organization that runs the award show. 24 other theaters followed suit, and LA Stage Alliance issued an apology and promised to do better. Taos spoke about this very issue on a recent episode of Torn, Theater on Racist Negativity. He said during that panel discussion, quote, "It's not the fact that they can't pronounce a name. They just don't want to do it. and you have to be strong in your heritage and who you are and say, this is my name. Please don't get me confused with the other person who doesn't even look like me. You can watch the entire panel discussion of that episode of Torn on my website. I'll put a link in the episode notes. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to this podcast. Follow me on social media at Beltline to Broadway. Make a tax-deductible donation to this program through my fiscal sponsor, Fractured Atlas, or visit us online at www.beltlinetobroadway.org. Until next time, I'll see you at the theater.